Thanks, Charles. Good morning, everybody. My name is Tim Heil, and I'm an alcoholic. Since April 12th of 1990, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink of alcohol or other mood-altering substances, and that's been absolutely, positively the best thing that's ever happened to me. And so glad to be here. This has been a wonderful weekend, just with some wonderful speakers. And Charles, I want to thank you, buddy. It's interesting. You know, Don told Don and I that we could either fly a commercial flight, or we could drive, or we could he'd have somebody come and get us. So naturally, I left it up to my sponsor, and so he says we're gonna take the plane. So I asked Charles. So as I'm asking Don, Don goes, you know, my wife's not too happy about this. I go, mine's not either. And so I asked Charles, what's the age of the airplane? He goes, what's a 1963 Mooney? I said, did you say 63? Yeah. He said, yeah, but it's been totally redone. And so we decided to come on it. And of course, right before we get on the airplane, my sponsor, as they do, goes, Tim, if Charles strokes out, who's going to take over, you or me? So all the way down here, I'm watching everything he's doing. I'm watching this. I'm watching. And then I finally decided, we're dead. You know. And you know, then what Don says, he says, but Timmy, think about it. You know, what a great AA story about it. We beat legends in AA. There was a part of that that appealed to me, and the part of it didn't sound so good. You know. But anyway, Charles, thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. And Dick and Barb, thanks so much for having me. And I just figured out, Michael, thank you very much. I just figured out I am not the youngest sobriety here. I got you about 6 months, buddy. But anyway, it's so good to be with, as somebody said earlier, so many of my AA heroes, people that I've listened to, including my sponsor, for years and years and years. And, you know, to be able to talk on this step is actually perfect for me, because I'm the type of guy, as you listen to my story, that this is the one thing the book says that, you know, when all else fails, working with another alcoholic will always suffice. And, you know, over the last 27 years, I've only done two things correctly. You know, we said the first step is something we have to do, and I haven't taken a drink, but I've always managed to keep a drunk in front of me through a lot of turmoil, a lot of confusion, and a lot of heartache, and I really do believe that. So I'm really happy to share on this particular step. You know, and the whole thing about the 12th step, you know, if you really get involved in it, somebody said this earlier, and I think Michael alluded to it, is that, you know, we get to experience things that people in the real world just do not. You know, and I really, more recently, with all the political upheaval and the tremendous tension that we have today in our society, I'm so glad to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Because the rules are so different here. You know, my home group is called the Lambton Street Group, and it's in the middle of downtown inner city Louisville, right? And as a direct result of where my home group is, probably about 75% of the guys I sponsor are African American. They're black men. That's where I got sober. That's where I grew up in AA. Probably 6-7 years ago, I was down that way, and they changed this one-way street to a two-way street down there, right? About 3 blocks from my home group, all right? And all of a sudden, I get hit in the rear end by this car. And the guy that hits me is an elderly black gentleman and his wife, and we're standing in the home, standing in the street waiting for the police to come. Now keep in mind, I'm about 3 blocks from my home group. Well, about that time, here come 2 guys down the side of the street, both black. They ran over to me. They go, hey, Tim, buddy, you okay? You all right? I go, yeah, guys, I'm all right. Go ahead. About that time, 2 guys came down the other side of the street, both African American. They ran over to me. Hey, Tim, are you okay, buddy? Are you all right? I go, yeah, guys, go ahead. About that time, car came off expressway. 5 guys in there, all black. They stopped the car and jumped out and said, Tim, are you hurt? Can we take you to the doctor or the hospital? I said, guys, I'm all right. Go ahead. I didn't think anything about it, right? I turned around. That elderly black gentleman hit me with standing. He went, who are you anyway? Now, what can I tell that guy, right? I'm just a drunk. But, you know, our book says we are people who normally would not mix, and what grows up amongst us is a fellowship that's indescribably wonderful, and it really is, you know. And, you know, this whole 12-step thing, too, you know, we've heard Sandy's name thrown out a number of times here, and I was a Sandy Beach guy, too, and, you know, I remember him talking about this, the 12th step, and what he said is we find spectacular value of the horrible past. You know, and only in Alcoholics Anonymous do we find spectacular value out of our horrible past. It reminds me of a story I heard Joe McQueenie tell one time. He said he was at an AA convention just like this, in a big hotel just like this. And he said he happened to be walking the hall behind two ladies who were not part of the AA, and he overheard their conversation. And one lady said to the other lady, "Well, what do they do in there anyway?" And the lady said, "Oh, it's awful." She said, "I peeked in there last night. One of them gets up there and talks about all these awful things that he did, and the rest of them laugh at him." And you know, if you think about that, you know, but our deal has always been about, you know, the less broken sharing with the more broken at any given point. You know, that's as good as it ever gets. And the deal about it, sometimes I'm the more broken and sometimes I'm the less broken. And the neat part about the 12th step is that it works both ways. You know, it works both ways. You know, and I think the 12th step, Lee, for me, is the bellwether step of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, they're all important, but I think if you ask people in general what they identified or what they know about Alcoholics Anonymous, they would say, well, I know they help people. They help people. You know, and I think that is so intrinsically basic sometimes that we miss the whole point. You know, as you look at the historical context of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, from the very beginning, right? Abby Thatcher shows up and meets Bill. And something happens. And what happened was, it wasn't what Abby said. It wasn't what Abby did. It was how Abby looked. It was what Clancy talked about last night, or yesterday, the identification. What he knew was, one alcoholic looked at another one and said, "This guy's a drunk, and something's happened." And that essential point, which started with those two guys, and then the same thing comes when Bill meets Bob. The same thing happens, you know, when the two of them go and see Bill D. I mean, and from that point, I mean, it's continued on and on and on, you know? You know, I looked up, Don's a wordsmith, and he has me look up words a lot. And I looked up, you know, to carry the message. And I looked, if you look up the word carry in the dictionary, it says to support and move someone or something from one place to another. Let me say that again. It says to support and move someone or something from one place to the other. Okay, and that's kind of that's a broad context. Okay, I think what it's saying to me is, Tim, carrying this message is going to be a lot more than you just mouthing off. You know, we all can do that. There's a much broader context here, and I'm going to talk about it as I talk about how important I think sponsorship today is in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then the next question that I always think is very interesting is, as we carry the message, and the question is, well, what's the message? What is the message? And, you know, I guess you can get some arguments about this. And I tend to want to choose this, you know, and I think Clancy again referred to Dr. Bob's last talk, you know, as he was dying. And he basically said to all of us, look, guys, don't complicate this. You know, it's really a simple process. It's really all about two things. It's about love and it's about service. Love and service. And you see, I think that is the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's the primary message. And the reason that's important to me, again, I think what has happened, just because we're human beings and Alcoholics Anonymous has now gotten older, and when we get human beings involved with anything, we will find a way to complicate it, you know, sooner or later. And so here we are in 2017, and poor old Dr. Bob, they didn't have much back in those days. You know, he knew love and service. But now, you know, we've got studies about the big book. We've got studies how to study the study about the big book, you know. We've got CDs. We've got tapes. We've got workshops. We've got it, buddy. We are beating this big book to death, all right? And my point is that I think it's really easy, you know, for this to become a cerebral process, you know. And I think, unfortunately, in some places in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's happened, right? And what I heard here this weekend, it's got nothing to do about what I know. It's got nothing to do about what you know. It's got everything to do with love. It's got everything to do with attraction versus promotion. You know, and that has never, ever changed for me. You know, one of the things is I sit and I listen to Maury and I listen to Clancy and I listen to Don, and I'm sure that it's the same thing with everybody who's been up here. Some of us, God gave the ability to put words together, and that's why we end up standing up here sometimes at the podium. But the real deal about all those three people I just met, and I happen to know two of the three pretty intimately, what you really need to know is that what they really do well doesn't ever happen at the podium. You know, it happens in their home group. It happens for Clancy at the Midnight Mission. You know, it happens for my sponsor, Don, in his office or early in the morning when he meets me for coffee. You know, that's the real deal. You know, I think there's two types of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's noisy AA, and we can make some noise. And I love noisy AA. I love to come in and get excited and celebrate and jump up and sing. But then there's a thing called, I think, quiet AA. Quiet AA is the real deal, right? That's the stuff going on in the 12-step process behind the scenes, okay, that you don't hear about, that you know, nobody knows. You know, I mean, I love, you know, some of the takes that I hear from the podium. And I love how people look at the steps and they bring their own personal, you know, journey to those steps. But what really impresses me is when I see what they do behind the scenes. And, you know, it very clearly says, you know, in our traditions, that it is about attraction, not promotion. And I, you know, I think it's so important for me today to understand we live today in a world of talk, right? Talk, 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 talk. We got talk radio, we got talk TV, we got social media, talk, 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 talk. And as most of you know, most of the people that are talking have no idea what they're talking about. But it doesn't matter, right? Just to get to do it anyway. And certainly, I don't bring that into Alcoholics Anonymous, because, you know, what I understand and has always understood is that, you know, what impresses me about my sponsor is what he does. And what he does is that he returns his phone calls every day. And he sponsors a lot of people, but somewhere I know when I call him, he will call back. What he does is that, you know, any time of the day that I need to make a call to him, he will find a way to make himself available. You know, and I think it's the whole thing about attraction and promotion, you know, because I think it really comes down to this. Are we going to, you know, build the 12-step around lifestyle, or are we going to build it around a set of beliefs and teaching beliefs? And I think, you know, one of the things I think it's very, very thing we have to watch closely in Alcoholics Anonymous is if we don't get into the process of teaching beliefs, you know, because that happens. It's happened in religion. It happens in churches. And we forget the whole process. The process is about love. The process is about God. The process has always been about, you know, representing, you know, an attraction to someone else, as Brian was to Michael. You heard that this earlier. That's never, ever going to change, you know. And I say that because, you know, I don't want to get caught in what I would call spiritual consumerism or AA consumerism, where I can talk the talk and I can get up and I can, you know, make it sound really good. And yet I have no idea, you know, what that translates into my personal life and into my business life and into my AA life. You know, this step's so important to me because, again, just give you a real capsule of my story, and some of you know it. And by the way, I want to thank all of you for being here, especially on the last session of the last thing. I mean, Michael referred to this too. I think Maury did too. You know, Don has said to me before, he said, Timmy, about 95% of the people that come to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, they do the basic deal. They get a sponsor. They go to meetings. They have a home group. They hang around. He said, but, you know, there's about 5% of the people who want it all. 5% of the people who are seekers. And they don't apologize, Michael, for being seekers. You know, I'm going to refer a little bit to a book today called Breathing Underwater by a Franciscan priest called Father Richard Rohr. You know, one of the real wonderful parts of my sobriety in the last 5 years especially, I've been able to turn back towards so many things I turned away from, right? And if you're a Catholic, you know, I grew up in the area that I did, like Michael did, a lot of us walked away from a lot of the ritual and a lot of the stuff that went with it. And now, you know, after being in the Alcoholics Anonymous and found the spiritual journey in the 12 steps, I'm seeing these connections, right, back to my church and back to my religion. You know, I remember I sit in church constantly now. I have my wife with me, and they'll be giving the sermon, and I'll go, that's our stuff. They stole our stuff. Yeah. She said, Timmy, they didn't steal your stuff. They've always been saying that, you know. But the point was, you know, God brought me through the portal of Alcoholics Anonymous so I could hear, right? And again, if you don't know about this man, and this particular book is really interesting because he's not an alcoholic, but he's fascinated by the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason is, in Cincinnati at his church, he had a congregation and he had an AA meeting in the basement. And he would sneak in the back door and sit in the AA meetings, and he found out that there was more spirituality in that basement that was coming through the front door on Sundays, right? And what he says, this is really interesting. And I don't know, this gives me chills when I say it, but to hear someone outside of our program, he says that he thinks history will look back on Alcoholics Anonymous as the greatest spiritual movement of the 20th century. And all we had to do was completely ruin our lives to become part of it. You know? How does that work, right? But anyway, my point is that, you know, don't, as Michael said, embarrassed about seeking the higher ground. What I think the wonderful part of these last three steps, 10, 11, and 12, is that there's no limit. There is absolutely no limit to the enlightenment. You know, the road just gets broader and broader if you want it to get broader and broader. And normally I find people who choose to come to things like this are seekers, who people who want more. And they came here, and not only did they come on Thursday, they're still here now because they came to get something. They want more. So give yourself a hand for that. I really mean that. Thank you. You know, there's three parts of the 12 step. You know, having had that spiritual awakening, we carry the message to the other alcoholics. Then we, having the spiritual awakening is one, carrying the message to alcoholics is two, and then practicing these principles in all our affairs. You know, let me say, first of all, about the second part, carrying the message to other alcoholics. You know, I try to tell my guys, I really believe that they very specifically say carry the message to alcoholics for a reason, okay? Because what I find today with a lot of the guys I work with is they want to shoot right by that part, and they want to go out and help everybody else, all right? And I said, wait a minute, I think there's some value to carrying the message to another alcoholic. And I remember my very early sobriety with my first sponsor. You know, I wanted to do well. I was on a roll. I wanted to change my life around, you know. I wanted to become, as Don talked, the spiritual Tim. And I got involved with hospice as a volunteer, you know, and I don't know why I did that. I'm not even 2 years sober, and I'm telling you, it was hard. My job was to sit with dying cancer patients, you know, 2 to 3 and 4 hours a day while these people, caregivers, went out. And it was eating my lunch. And I remember telling my sponsor about it. And he goes, Timmy, what are you trying to do? You know, he said, you need to be around your own kind. I said, what do you mean? He said, you are a drunk. You need to be around other drunks. That's how this works. You know, you can be the deacon of a million churches. You can be the head of the Boy Scouts of America. You can do all that if you want, son. But if you forget first and foremost what you are, then you could pretty much forget about the rest, right? And so this whole idea, and the reason I'm going to say that is, one of the other things, if you talk to people that have been around a long time, and you say, what's the difference today in AA versus when they came in 40 years ago? Most of them will say, well, you know, back in those days, there were 10 old-timers for every newcomer. And now, what do we got? How many new people do you have in your meetings every day versus the old-timers? Huge numbers, right? So if it ever was more important that sponsorship become an important part of everybody's life, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I think some of us tend to take sponsorship way too serious. And one of the things about my sponsor, he won't let me take anything too serious. Because what he always tells me is that, Timmy, whatever you're making a big deal out of, other than God or the 12 steps, you're just making a big deal out of yourself, son. You know? And the same thing. So if I'm making a big deal out of sponsorship, making it tough and making it, you know, so tangled up that it keeps me in an uproar and keeps the people I'm sponsoring in an uproar, something's wrong there. But the point is that I have a lot of guys that tell me, Tim, you know, I'm not sponsorship material. You know, you're good at it. So we'll send them to you. And I always say, what do you mean you're not good at it? What do you think sponsorship is? You know, it's very simple. We're simply asked to give to the next person simply what we've been given. And that's what it said. It's our support, as it said, in terms of carrying that message, our support, our love, and the process of taking them through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, how difficult is that? All right? And I say that because, you know, I think we're at a point today with Alcoholics Anonymous, right, with the great numbers. My home group, we have 150 new people almost every day. You know, like the average sobriety in my home group is like a red chip, you know. I mean, I am by far the old timer there. So I'm seeing all these kids come through the rooms day after day, you know, and we have a point in our home group where we ask everybody, anybody need a sponsor? You know, because we don't want anybody leaving that room without the opportunity to have sponsorship. Because if it ever was important, I think today, because of the great numbers of people that we have, you know, it's become more and more important. You know, my story of, I showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous. And like Michael, I had a longing to do the right thing. I realized pretty quickly that I had that hole in my soul and when I stopped drinking. But, you know, kind of like my sponsor, for the first 10 years of my sobriety, you know, romance and finances like that killed me too. You know, I lost my marriage at 5 years sober for the third time to the same lady. And ended up getting remarried in the program at 9 years sober, and that lasted 8 months. All right? And I'm out there trying to be the spiritual giant in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I really mean it was very difficult. I remember about that is coming back to Don, coming back to other people saying, what is wrong with me? And they said, well, Timmy, you're an alcoholic. And then they would say, Timmy, just keep helping drunks, son. Just keep helping drunks. They always say that. You know that? They always say, just keep helping drunks. I remember when I first got sober, you'd call them and say, hey, Joe, man, she ain't doing right. The people at work ain't doing right. This is terrible. And they thought, okay, all right. Hey, why don't you go to that meeting and see if you can find a drunk to help? And I would think, they did not hear what I said, you know? Because what they knew about this particular process, and you've heard it all weekend, if the core of my problem is selfishness and self-centeredness, there's only one solution for me, and that is getting into concerted action. And the good news about this 12th step, although it's at the very end of the steps, and it is one that we can get started with right away. You know, and I think one of the things that we're really trying to work on in our home group, which in some ways I think is not as popular as it used to be in the old days, was just basic, physical, stupid, nonsensical service in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and you hear people about picking up the ashtrays and picking up the chairs and doing that. That was all I was capable of when I showed up. You know, and sometimes I think, you know, we've gotten to the idea now where, you know, no, you got to wait to a certain point in time where you're ready to go out and help somebody else. No. I mean, I was so self-centered that, you know, I needed to learn from the beginning that there are other people in the world, you know, and that you need to start taking your time, your effort. I started at 14 months sober, you know, just drier than a bone. I got sent down to my home group, Lambton Baptist Church, and I became the coffee maker there on Wednesday morning, right? And it changed my world. And I want to tell you, I remember it so well because I hated it. God, I hated it. We had 150 people. We got two pots of coffee this big. I'd have to get there 2 hours before. I was wearing a suit every day in those days. I'd get those coffee grounds all over me. I'd be cussing, you know. But then I'd realize, well, Tim, if you don't get that coffee made, you have 150 people, you know, not very happy. And I realized that, you know, your life is not about you anymore, Tim. Don't you understand what these people are trying to tell you? You're going to learn to live a life of service outside of you, you know. And that process, you know, began with me with some very simple things, you know, and giving people rides. You know, and what I will tell you today, and I tell a lot of the guys I sponsor, they go, well, man, that's inconvenient to give a guy a ride. And, you know, I mean, I said, well, yeah, it's very convenient if he's on your way home. Wonder if he lives 5 miles the other way. That's what really makes a difference. I have one of the guys I sponsored, Don knows him. I guess he's 12 years sober now, and every time he talks, we had this old wet drunk at our home group, and So I saw the opportunity to have this guy drive him home one day, one morning, and he was drunk. And so he puts him in his brand new Ford truck, reluctantly. About 20 minutes later, I get a call, and he's all upset, screaming. He goes, "That guy peed in my car," you know. Had a big old pee spot right on the passenger side. I said, "Well, are you sober?" He goes, "Yeah." But the point is, I have stayed comfortably uncomfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me say that again. I stay comfortably uncomfortable in AA. Because you know what? If I get comfortable, guess what's happening? I'm starting to follow my self-will. And if I'm following my self-will, Maury, then I'm following the disease of alcoholism. So yeah, is it going to be uncomfortable? You bet it's going to be uncomfortable. Because you know how sponsees are. They never call at the right time. It's always in the middle of the game. You know, it's always in the middle of dinner. It's always that inopportune time. But what I've realized, that how that process has kept me sober time and time again, and how it brings me back to the reality that my job is to love, comfort, and understand. You know, my job, and as Don so eloquently always talks about it, is to be of maximum service for God and His people. Spiritual awakening, you know, and that's part of the 12th step. And, you know, you hear a lot of talk about what is that. And, you know, I have to tell you, you know, for me, as you hear, is that part really took about 10 years for me of taking some really heavy hits and some lumps to really become humble enough and ready enough to really, I think, surrender myself to that part of me that was continuing to cause so much trouble, as you've heard everybody talk about. You know, and I gave a workshop a couple weeks ago on emotional sobriety. And, you know, and I always thought, you know, emotional sobriety should be subtitled emotional sobriety, or what we didn't really tell you is that you're going to have to stop drinking and change everything else about you, you know. For me, it took what it took over those years. It took those divorces. It took whatever to drive me to a point of surrender, you know, where I was willing to change. But the spiritual awakening thing, really in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years for me, has gotten to be such a neat thing, all right? Because my relationship, my intimacy, as Michael was talking about with God, is just increased. Let me read what Richard Rohr talks about this. And when in the 12th step in this book, Breathing Underwater, I just love this. And he's taken a look at what Bill Wilson wrote, and here's what he says. Here's a Catholic Franciscan priest looking at the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, "So what Wilson intuitively knew was that if we didn't turn outward with our daily focus, we would find our dominant concern to be our own self-development and or getting caught up in AA spiritual consumerism. In our case in AA, going to more meetings, talk the talk, but never making ourselves available to the new man or woman." Page 62 tells us that we are selfish, and the only way we'll be able to transform this selfish adolescent nature is by serving others. It is not something we do when we get our act together. We start immediately because we cannot truly comprehend any spiritual thing until we ourselves give it away. You know, and somehow, again, that touches me so much because somehow Wilson intuitively knew when he made that phone call to Henrietta Seiberling when he was in that hotel. Intuitively, God let him know that the only avenue he had to save himself at that particular moment was to reach out to another alcoholic, you know? And I can't tell you how many times, you know, over the last 27 years, you know, that has saved my bacon, you know, time and time again. And just like Don says, I usually don't want to do it. I usually don't think it's going to work. I always know what he's going to say. You know? But the bottom line is, somehow there's a magic in that process that's never failed me when I have the courage and the humility to make that phone call. Because I think what happens to all of us as we get along in sobriety, you know, and let me tell you, when I was 10 years sober, and I had met a lady in AA, and I determined right away that this was a good deal. I mean, she and I were on the same page. We were going to go right off into AA sunset together. I mean, I was convinced Bill Wilson was looking down saying, "Wow, this on paper is one of the best AA relationships I have ever seen." Don likes to point out sometimes, and that I told you that lasted 8 months. Don likes to point out that Timmy How come you didn't tell me that you were getting married until after you were married? And you know, it was just one of those times, and every time I have stepped around that valuable process, every time I have taken that human element out that we find in the 12th step, you know, I tell the guys sometimes, I sponsor, it's kind of like this. I'm sitting in a meeting, and I see this gorgeous girl sitting there, and I think, she needs help. And I actually say a little prayer to God. God, what do you think? And God goes, yep, Timmy, get in there and help her, buddy. Now, interestingly enough, when I share that prayer with Don, he doesn't hear God's message exactly the same as I do. And so this process of the 12th step, which we learn in 4 and 5, I mean, I'm 27 years sober, and it's every bit as valuable today, because as soon as I hold back that little piece, as soon as I take Don out of the equation or Dick out of the equation, my ego, my self-will is stepping up again, and you can almost write it down. It's going to be catastrophic in most every case for me. And I've had to take some real hard lumps to do that. But you know, when Rohr talks about what a spiritual awakening is, I love this. He talks about this. I've never heard it put this way. He says, the spiritual awakening is the convergence of the two great freedoms. And the two great freedoms is when God is free for the people and the people are free for God. Maury said something last night, and I think it is so, so powerful, is that where did this whole concept come of the God of your own understanding? You got to remember, these people were in religious backgrounds. They came from the Oxford group. So where does this come? Where does this revolutionary thought of choosing a God of your own understanding come? You know, if that's not divinely inspired, I don't know what is. But the freedom is, we keep God free enough that any of us have access to Him because of that, right? And then the flip, keeping the people, making the people free for God. That's what the 12 steps are all around. You know, we eliminate through the process of 4, 5, 6, and 7, we eliminate those blocks that are blocking us from the sunlight of the Spirit. And so what he says is, the spiritual awakening is when those two beautiful freedoms converge, that's a spiritual awakening. You know, and I think I understand what they're saying. Not that I am there all the time, but absolutely what I do understand is I've continued to work this process, continue to get in touch with my self-centeredness, and through 6 and 7, ask God to take those. I have become free to access this God who is also free, not bound by religion, not bound by any philosophy, not bound. It is just there. And I think in its essence, you know, that's Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest, in its best form. You know, and I just loved that when I saw that. You know, the last part of the 12th step is practicing these principles in all our affairs. Whoa. You know? Now, I have to tell you, I love, there's so many joys and so many things that have happened to me as a direct result of being very involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. My office is very close to my home group, and it's downtown, and so I have drunks in and out of there all the time, right? And but anyway, I get to tell you a couple of things. I was about 2 years sober, and we had a new receptionist, and she didn't know anything about that I was an AA. She didn't know I was a drunk. So one day I call in there and I said, Tammy, give me my phone messages. She says, okay, Tim, here they are. Well, Larry called and he said, thanks for last night. Jimmy called and said, could he get together with you tonight? Oh, yeah. And she said, there's one more. I said, well, go ahead. She said, well, Scott called and he just wants you to know that he loves you. I said, Tammy, look, when I get in there, we have to have a talk. Yeah. And you know what? I went in there and I shared my story with her, and she basically had a daddy who was an alcoholic, and her husband was on his way. And, you know, my thing has been, if we stay on the firing line of life, you know, we really don't have to worry about this attraction and promotion, you know. I give you another one. I'm in the insurance business, all right? We sell home and auto insurance. So I have one lady in there who does just the auto insurance, right? Her name was Susan. And Susan had no idea either when she started with this that I was in recovery. So naturally, when I'm out in the meetings, especially the ones I go to, right, downtown in the halfway house capital of the world, all these guys are asking me for auto insurance, right? So I would just give them Susan's number and say, call Susan. So Susan comes to my office one day. She goes, Tim, can I talk with you? I said, sure. She goes, where do you get these people that you're sending me? She said, I have never seen such driving records in my life. And again, I said, sit down, Susan. I want to tell you something. Right. And so, you know, and I could go on and on. You know, it's been so many interesting and beautiful mixes where God just, you know, and in Susan's case, she had an alcohol problem in her family. You know, I wanted to talk about, you know, the division in my life. You know, one of the things I remember early in sobriety, and I think this is important if you're really working hard on the 12th step and you're invested with a lot of people. I am, and Don is correctly categorized me as an overachiever, right? I was the oldest child. I was an all-state athlete. Before my alcoholism got me, I was one of those guys that wanted to do well. And so when I came in AA, it was a setup for me, right? Because I immediately thought, I see the deal here. The more people you sponsor, the more points you get, you know? The more meetings you go to, the more points you get. And I'm killing it, man. I got a meeting in my office. I got a meeting in my home. I'm going to like 10 meetings a day. I'm sponsoring 30 guys. I am killing it. And I am dying. I am dying. And my first sponsor said, Timmy, geez, write all that down on a paper and take a look at it. Oh, my God. You know, I wrote it all down on the paper, the meetings I was going to, the guys I was sponsoring. And I took it into him very proudly. I thought, he'll be impressed with this. Probably be jealous he's not doing as much as me. But so I lay it out there, and he goes, what's this all about? I said, what do you mean it's all about? He said, Timmy, let me ask you something. Do you believe that you're getting points here? Do you believe God's going to love you more because you're sponsoring more guys? That he's going to love you more because you go to more meetings? He said, I got bad news for you, son. He said, God loves that drunk out there on the street right now just as much as he loves you. We don't earn God's love. That has nothing to do about it. You know, that's given for fun and for free. It's always been there, as Michael so well pointed out. All we had to do was turn around and grab God's hand. And it was a breakthrough for me, because I saw that part of me again. You know, what always happens, which is stepped right in the middle of the process and was causing pain, not only to me, but was causing pain to the people around me. Practicing the principles in all your affairs. I was a very angry guy when I got sober, and I owed about $250,000 to people who really wanted it back. And so I was consumed with financial insecurity. And so I'm in this business of mine trying to keep it from going bankrupt, you know, day after day. My very best employee was a little church lady named Margaret. Oh, she was just a good little lady. And she was my best employee. And, you know, she is just a doll. So about a year into my sobriety, she says, can I talk to you, Tim? About Christmas time, about this time of year. I said, well, sure. So Margaret comes in and she sits down. She says, Tim, I quit. I said, what do you mean you quit? I said, no, Margaret, you can't quit now. Look, sit down. Let me tell you this whole story. I'm a drunk, but I'm a year sober, and I'm getting, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm helping other people. I'm practicing, you know, the spiritual principles every day to the best of my ability. And boy, she's sitting there, tears coming down her face, and she said, oh, Tim, I am so happy for you. Yeah, I really am. But she said, Tim, don't you think one of those places you should practice those principles would be here at work? She said, Tim, we are scared to death of you. You walk around here like you're going to kill somebody. And you see, what I didn't realize is that I wasn't drinking, but my disease was still harming a lot of people. Because they could feel that financial insecurity. They could see that anger in me because of that, you know. It was my first real, you know, taste of, again, consequences as a direct result of my alcoholism that had nothing to do with drinking. Boy, I thought I had her too, you know. And I said, Margaret, you're going to stay, aren't you? She goes, no, I still quit, you know. But the point was, and that was just the beginning, and I want to share this with you. I lost my marriage at 5 years sober to my high school sweetheart, and that was the third divorce by that time. And that was very hurtful. And I would have told you, just like somebody said today, is that she just couldn't get on the spiritual journey with me, you know? I mean, she was a classic story. She was in Al-Anon until I got sober. When I got sober, she stopped going to Al-Anon because she had achieved the purpose. And then here I was, the spiritual giant, growing every day in my house, and my poor wife was just out there. And I'd go to meetings and find these Al-Anon women, Barbara, and I'd say, it's awful. They say, oh, honey, does she go to Al-Anon? I say, oh, no, she doesn't. She doesn't. She goes, well, honey, you just hang in there best you can. I said, well, thank you. Thank you. And the point was, you know, I lost that marriage 5 years sober, not because I was drinking, because my disease was still not translating into my home. I listened to Michael talk about, I had no skills when I got sober at 42 years old. I had started drinking when I was 16. And I remember somebody saying to me when I first showed up, Tim, you have no living skills. And it hurt my feelings. I said, what do you mean? They said, Tim, you have survival skills. And there are two of them, fight or flee. And when they said that, my whole world flashed in front of me because that was my MO. I was either fighting and running or running and fighting, some combination of the two. I had no ability in my home, in my work, to stay in between the two poles, right? I didn't have that skill set. So everything I've learned, Michael, about being a husband, about being a parent, I've learned, you know, since being in Alcoholics Anonymous when I got here at 42 years old. And one of them was the most simple thing in the world. You know, when I used to go home, you're talking about that meeting, preparing for that meeting with your wife. My deal was, okay, what's your problem? And she would tell me what happened that day, and I was sure she wanted me to answer that and give her a solution for her problem. I had no ability to understand. All she wanted me to do was listen. But you know what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous? How to listen. I didn't know how to listen until I got here, but I learned through other men how to sit patiently and listen to sponsees. And when I go home today, and I'll share that in a minute, but what I'm saying to you is, and I want to come back to what my step was, the 12th step, despite my inability to grow very quickly in that process, and it had to take the consequences, what kept me afloat, what kept me in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous was working with other drunks. It is the one thing I've never, ever stopped doing. And it's kind of like Don says, sometimes I really enjoy it, I understand why I'm doing it, and I really believe it's working. The other times, I don't like doing it, you know, I don't think it's working, and I don't want to do it. But somewhere along the line, you guys said, no, you that's one thing you've got to do. You've got to keep another drunk in front of you, Tim, because sooner or later, the rest of the process of the steps, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, is going to help you. You know, and in my case, it took what it took. And really, when I lost that marriage in Alcoholics Anonymous at 10 years sober, I was driven to my knees at a whole different level. And it was basically like, God, what is it in me? What is it in me that's so broken that I can't have a decent relationship with somebody? And it was really very simple. You know, it was my core of selfishness and self-centeredness, which I just was going to take what it would take for me to get to the point where I became truly willing to change. And that's when Don came into my life. And I got Don as my sponsor because he was a loving and tolerant man, and I was not a loving and tolerant man. You know, and I would say that to all of you, you know, find people that have what you want, you know, because what I've learned from him is to follow what he does. And for example, one of the things I share with you that works very well in my life today, and I thank him every day for this, I got to a point in Alcoholics Anonymous where there was no balance in my life. Anybody heard that word? And I went to Don, I said, Don, there's no balance in my life. I mean, there's no balance between my AA life seems to be conflicting with my home life. My home life seems to be conflicting with my business life. What should I do? He said, Timmy, you know what? He said, you know, if we could balance our life, that would mean that we could manage it, right? They always say stuff like that, you know? And I said, what do you mean? He said, Timmy, let God manage your life. Isn't that what the third step prayer says? And I said, yes, sir. And I tell you, today there's no division in my life. There's no division between my personal life and my business life and my AA life. And here's the crazy part about it. 27 or now 19 years later, I am more involved in AA I've ever been. My business life is better than it's ever been. My personal life is better than it's ever been. How does that work? Well, I let God do the scheduling. And if you looked at my schedule today, just like Don taught me, you would see, you know, I might meet an AA guy for coffee at 8. You know, we have a third step at 9. I got a business meeting at 10. I got a business meeting at luncheon. I've got a fifth step at 2. And the bottom line is, how does that happen? Well, it's real simple. Whoever calls first goes on the line. You know, I don't make a judgment anymore as to whether or not if that space is open, then I assume that's what God wants me to do. And somehow, for the last 19 years, when I do that, it works out just fine. Thank you. You know? let me share this with you. And some of you know this because I don't want you to think that, I haven't grown some spiritually. You know, I do love helping the guys that I sponsor. You know, after 10 years sober, when I lost that marriage in the program, and it was really, really devastating to me, and Don got into my life, and we really started, you know, taking a harder look at my self-centeredness and the things that were really causing me and the people around me problems. Well, as I always talk about, a strange thing for me, guys, happened on my way to long-term celibacy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was living with my dad back in 10 years sober, and interestingly enough, I get a call from my most frequent wife, as I call her, you know, the mother of my children, who I've been married and divorced 3 times, and she was down in South Carolina with the kids and the grandkids, and she said, "Timmy, I heard what happened with your marriage. You want to come down here and stay with us and see the kids?" I said, yeah, thank you. I would like to do that. So I drove down there, and I got a separate condo from when they were staying. Now, keep in mind, you know, we've been married and divorced 3 times. We met each other when we were 17 years old. And for whatever reason, the walls were always so high that we just couldn't get over them, right? That particular weekend, I went down there, and for some reason, the walls weren't so high. For some reason, we actually were able to talk very, very, you know, comfortably. For some reason, we agreed to be friends, and we agreed to be parents and co-parents. There was an ease and a comfort all of a sudden that was kind of, I don't know how to explain it. I came home, eventually got my condo back, and then we started to date. Because we'd never dated. We just got married, you know. And we dated. I took her out every Friday night, and I learned how to take a woman on a date, you know. And now I'm 52 years old at this point in time. And eventually, I sold my place, and I moved in with her. And what I wanted to share with you is that this last month, on November the 28th, we celebrated our 47th gross wedding anniversary. And you know what? What I want to share with you, and how all this ties in to that is, that was a very painful, crazy journey where most of the time I had no idea where I was, why it was the way it was, which is often the case that we find ourselves on this spiritual journey. And I asked Don when we got married again, I said, "Is this pretty crazy?" And he said, "Well, yeah, it's crazy." He said, "But Timmy, maybe not. Because you know what about what our program is truly about? It's about transformation. And you know the thing about transformation? We don't know when it's going to happen. We don't know how it's going to look. And we don't know who's going to be involved. You know why? We don't transform. God does. We do the stitches. We leave the patterns up to God. You know? So somewhere along all that insanity and all that chaos, two people changed immensely. Because see, what I didn't know, when I had that marriage in Alcoholics Anonymous, my wife went back to Al-Anon. She got into therapy, and she will tell you today that for the first time in all that, she saw that she had a part. But I didn't know that. And it was none of my business. But God was doing for me what I needed to have done, and He was doing for her what He needed to have done. And all of a sudden, this convergence, as we talked about earlier, of two people who had undergone the transformation process of the 12 steps, you know, came together. And I need to tell you, we are so close today. I miss her, you know. I just love her to death. We We're such soul partners today. We do everything together. You know, we have 8 grandkids and we have 2 great-grandchildren. And we're just living an incredible dream. You know, I have to tell you this. We went to our 50th high school reunion this last year. We walked in there. Everybody went, oh, look, they're still together. Oh, man. Only in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I guess what I want to tie together, you all, is that, you know, what kept me going through all of that was the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the simple little thing of, Tim, go find a drunk to help. Find a drunk to help. And I tell you, I wouldn't trade it for anything else in the world. I mean, some of the experiences that I've had as a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to share this with you real quick. I told you I sponsor just a lot of African-American guys. And one guy I've been sponsored for 22 years, and it's Don knows him. He's just a joy. He's got more freedom than anybody I ever know. But his mother died. And so I went to the funeral, all right? All black funeral, Baptist funeral. And I'm the old little white Catholic guy in there. I'm the only white man in the whole church, all right? And there's 3 preachers up there, man, and they get it going. You know, and I'm between these 2 gals, and they get to swinging. You know, they found the Holy Ghost, man, and they're swinging back and forth. Like this, and all of a sudden I'm swinging back and forth like this. And they're yelling, you say that, preacher? And I'm going, yeah, you say that, preacher? Oh, man. And here's the flip side. 2 years later, my dad dies, okay, and we have a Catholic, all-white, conservative, nobody's talking funeral, right? I'm up doing the eulogy. Here's my buddy. I can see him all the way back in the church. I saw those little white eyes peering back there. And I'm about to say something. I hear him go, you say that, coach. You say that, baby. And everybody in the church goes, you know, I wouldn't trade some of the joys, you know, of sponsoring these men. And this particular guy I'm talking about, he was a street drunk. He was in the insane asylum so many times, it's not even funny, you know. So the joy that you see, as Michael said today, of seeing that gleam come in somebody's eyes, you know, it's just been something that you should never, ever miss. Let me finish up with this, because I know everybody's ready to get home. And Charles, how you feeling, right? Feeling pretty good? Oh, good, 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 good. But anyway, I told you I had three beautiful children in my marriage, right? I had 2 sons and I had a little girl. And my baby girl was her daddy's daughter all the way, man. I mean, when she was a toddler, her first little phrase was, I'll do it myself. Her second little phrase was, is you're not the boss to me, you know? So I knew, uh-oh, here we go. And by the time she's 12 years old, I'm finding 6-packs in her closet, 1/2 pints in her backpack. I'm chasing her all over the city of Louisville, getting her out of jail for shoplifting. You know, game was on. She drank just like her old man drank. And let me tell you about this child. Tall, blonde, blue-eyed, very gifted. Gifted athlete, gifted artist. But she had the disease of alcoholism, and she had it bad, right? About 16 years ago, she left Louisville, and she went to the Chicago Art Institute on an art scholarship. And I knew she was heavy into her drinking, and she left there and got into the second city, the performing arts thing, and went to Los Angeles into the second city. I want to tell you, I hadn't seen her in about 2 years. Her mom and I hadn't seen her. About 16 years ago, she showed up, and let me tell you what I saw. Here was my beautiful, blonde, blue-eyed girl. Her eyes were collapsed into her head. Her hair was matted to her head. Cheeks were collapsed. Her teeth were falling out. She was so thin that you could actually see her ribs through her T-shirt. She got ready to go back to Los Angeles, and I said to her, honey, is there anything that we can do for you before you leave? And she looked at me with those steely, alcoholic eyes and said, Daddy, if I need help, I'll ask you. And she got in her car, and she took off and headed back to Los Angeles. You know, and you guys, I knew it was only going to be a matter of time, right, before that phone was going to ring because she was sick. Because in addition to her alcoholism, she had an eating disorder. So her body was starting to consume itself because all she was doing was drinking. And she had no concept of the eating disorder either. And about 5 weeks later, the phone did ring. And the good news, it was her. The bad news is she was so weak by that time. She was living in her car in the streets of Los Angeles. And by that time, she was so weak she was whispering. And she said to me, now keep in mind, I'm about 12 years sober. She says, Daddy, what should I do? I want to tell you guys something. What's going through my mind was, you know, all right, Tim, what do you think about the A&A now, buddy? What do you think about those 12 steps you're always popping off about now? And here was the big one. Tim, what about that God of your understanding? And you guys, it wasn't good enough. You know, if you're a daddy, all I wanted to do was get on an airplane and go out there and bring my little girl home, man. It wasn't good enough. But for some reason, what I said to her, honey, here's a man's phone number in Los Angeles in Alcoholics Anonymous. I pray and I hope you will call him. And you guys, I hung up that phone and I tell you, I cried and cried and cried because I'm thinking, it's 50% at best where she makes that call or we go out there and bring her home in a box because she was sick. But you know, I want to share this with you because somewhere what I also knew was deep down inside that I had given her the only thing that I know it's ever worked for people like me and you. The only thing in the history of mankind that I know of that consistently and persistently has kept people like me and you alive. And you know, whether it was she was my kid and she was 2,000 miles away, it didn't matter. That's all I had to give her. But it didn't seem enough, you know. But it was a tremendous surrender to me because I realized that, you know, Timmy, it's not in your hands. You can get on an airplane and you can fly there, but she is in God's hands. And you have pointed her toward the only solution that you know of. It's the one that worked for you. It's the one that worked for Don. It's the one that worked for Bill and Bob. And for the last 80 some odd years, it's saved the lives of thousands of people. You know, but I want to tell you something. You know, I cried and I cried and I said, God, please, whatever, your will be done. Well, I'm very happy to tell you that this last July, you know, her mom and I got on an airplane, flew to Los Angeles and helped her celebrate her 15-year anniversary in Alcoholics Anonymous. And let me share this with you. And this is where I bring the 12 step in. The man whose phone number I gave her was a man named Scott Redman. Some of you may have known Scott. And the reason I mention him, his last name, he's gone. Scott passed away with liver cancer. He's probably 6-7 years ago, I guess. And I had met Scott along this trail, you know, and I knew he was a good man. I'll be forever grateful to Scott Redman that the night that she made that call to him, 26 years sober, that he didn't decide, oh, honey, look, I don't have time. I'm all the way across town, which he was. I'll have some woman call to you tomorrow. He didn't do that. I'll be forever grateful that that night, and this is what this 12 steps all about, when that girl called him, he said, where are you? And where can I meet you? Because if he doesn't answer that call, you guys, I got a different story to tell. You know, because one man, one night, when he got that call, at 26 years sober, decided to do exactly what we're all asked. Anytime, anywhere, someone needs our help. The hand of AA has got to be there for that. We are all responsible. And that's the bottom line. You know, we're all going to go back to our home group from here. We've had a great weekend. But that's the deal, because sometimes, somewhere in the future, somebody else is going to call you. It's going to be somebody else's grandkid. It's going to be somebody else's kid. And I hope that I will suit up and show up and answer the bell like that man did that night, because that's what this program is truly all about. And she is a member today, and he's gone, and I thank him so much. She's an outstanding member or upstanding member of the Pacific Group in Los Angeles. And let me say this to you, and he's not here. You know, a lot of people have their opinion about Clancy. I mean, he says what he wants to say, but let me tell you something. I will forever love him because he watches over my kid. For the last 15 years, he watches over her like I would watch over her. And that gives me the ability to go to sleep at night. It gives me the ability. See, so I don't care what he says from the podium. I don't care what he's on his CDs. I'm glad Scott Redman didn't say to my daughter, hey, I'll send you a CD of my talk. I'm glad he said, where do you want to meet me? And I know every Wednesday night where Clancy sits in that meeting, and I know he will go see my daughter. And for that, I'll be forever grateful. Because see, that's the deal, right? That's the deal. That's what this has been all about from the very beginning, and it will never, ever change. It's always going to be about one drunk sitting eyeball to eyeball with another drunk and showing the love that when that time comes, as uncomfortable as it may be, that we suit up and we set up, show up, and we deliver the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I'll just say this to all of you, and I'm getting ready to get on a plane and head home, is that please stay at your sobriety post in Alcoholics Anonymous. I told you I had those 8 grandkids. I've already picked out 2 of those little suckers, I'm telling you. Thank you, guys.